I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Noongar people. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging.
The wines have this incredible ability to show generosity and power, yet be pulled back in with this incredible fine line, and acid really tightens up the palate and gives the wines incredible energy. And I think that's a beautiful combination when you think about, you know, great wines of the world.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Franklin Estate is a family affair. Located in the remote Great Southern of Western Australia, their little slice of grape-growing heaven is called the Franklin River region. Here, the self-sufficient, pioneering family have established themselves as one of Australia's most exciting wine estates. And today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Hunter Smith. Hi, Hunter. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Shantae. Thank you. The pleasure's mine.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that we got you. Hunter, we have around about 4,000 kilometres stretch between where you and I are today. Just for all our listeners, can you tell us what are you looking out on today and where are you joining us from?
So I'm actually sitting on a veranda, and which has a beautiful view to the northeast and down across the hillside. And Franklin River's probably famous for its rich farming land, high rainfall farming land. But obviously in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, vineyards started popping up. And so I'm looking down over our Isolation Ridge vineyard that surrounds the winery itself. And there's fog down in the valleys, and, you know, the vines are starting to lose their leaves and as we head towards pruning. So very picturesque, cool morning.
Oh, sounds idyllic to me. I want to talk a bit about the Franklin Estate, how Franklin Estate came about, and then we'll get to kind of your part in it. So can you give us a little background, because it is such an important estate and you've got so many fans. So we want to hear all about where this wonderful idea came about.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. My father was, he grew up on a vineyard in the Riverland of South Australia. And, you know, in his late teenage years, you know, that was his playground, I suppose, water skiing, you know, on the Murray and hanging out in South Australia. And so wine was very much part of, or grape growing was very much part of his growing up. And, you know, wine drinking became very much a part of his hobby, I suppose. And his family left the Riverland and came to Western Australia. And my grandfather settled on a war service settlement place down in Franklin River, or just down the road, actually, Rocky Gully to be exact. But we're only talking 15 kilometres there. But he was selling real estate in Perth, and my mother was doing radiology in Perth, and they met. And they would do these weekend trips to my grandfather's, my father's father's farm, down in Rocky Gully, and they would they saw a property for sale on one of these trips and decided that they should look at buying it, and with the aim of potentially moving down and farming, you know. And I'm talking back then, it was all mostly sheep grazing, fine wool, merino wool production, which we still do a little bit of, but that's a different story. They fell in love with the property, and wool was going through some good times, and they purchased another property across the road, and then finally the third property, which was just a little further, 4 kilometres up on top of the hill, which is where we now are, where I'm now sitting today, and where the Isolation Ridge Vineyard is. So we're talking in the about 1974, my father and mother bought this property. And for many years it was sheep grazing, wheat canola production. And then in 1988, after, I suppose, you know, my parents still having this passion for drinking wine and, you know, all things wine, they'd spent a number of years going backwards and forwards to Europe and particularly Bordeaux, immersing themselves and actually doing vintages in Bordeaux. And then really as a hobby. And then my father started doing a few vintages with local producers like Plantagenet Wines, which were newly established at the time. And they made the decision in 1988 to plant a small vineyard. So originally that was not quite a hectare of Riesling, a hectare of Chardonnay, 2 hectares of Shiraz, 2 hectares of Cabernet Sauvignon and 1 hectare of Cabernet Franc. And that was the original plantings in 88. And so that was, really the start of it. I don't think they really knew what they were getting themselves into. And I think the big thing here is that, you know, there was a couple of vineyards in the area, but really in the Great Southern back in 1988, wine growing was not the norm in the region. And so they had to overcome all these challenges around, you know, starting a winery. The concrete was poured in the middle of the Isolation Ridge Vineyard in 1992, ready for the 93 harvest. So, all these things all these challenges around producing wine in a very remote location became very real very quickly for them. But, speaking to them, they wouldn't change a moment of that. One of the things I would say, I think really has stayed true to our business and to our philosophy around wine is, their exposure to, and their willingness to travel and be exposed to such great wineries and estates around the world, throughout Europe, particularly in the early 80s in particular. They really felt a passion for these wineries that were focused on making wines that expressed a true sense of place. And I think that's something that's very much held true to us all the way through the journey. And one of the things that drives us around making the wines in the location we make them.
I mean, they went straight to Bordeaux. I mean, fantastic decision, I suppose, to really see and immerse themselves in winemaking. But Harold Olmo was a big part of, had a big impact on viticulture in the region and, saw the potential of some of those kind of Bordeaux varieties there. What has been your, experience for the region with Harold Olmo? It's I just think it's a bit of a nice story and I haven't had anyone tell it yet, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting. Harold Olmo was sort of becoming more and more regarded through that, through the 50s with his particular, his big claim to fame was really coming up with a clone of Chardonnay that, made the Napa Valley produce consistently good yielding Chardonnay that really put Napa Valley as a core producing region of California. And so that industry obviously went from strength to strength, and as did his reputation around the world. And, I think later was dubbed the Indiana Jones of viticulture and travelled, to extraordinary places to look at varietals and clones of grapes from all over the world. But thankfully for Western Australia, he was invited by the Agricultural Society back in 1955 to come to Western Australia and help the Swan Valley with some issues they were having with their grape growing. And that was, reduced vine vigor and a few things. And he quickly pointed out that there was a nematode issue in the soils and that, with some cultivation and some good viticultural practices, they would remedy those. But he did say to the government at the time, you should look at cooler climates for good you know, good grape production to make fine, you know, fine table wines. So really, so they asked him to stay on in the state and spend more time, and he travelled down through the southwest and I suppose was the first person to put a flag in the ground in the upper reaches of the Franklin River, which in his little publication he put out in 1956 says that, you know, the upper reaches of the Franklin River region would be the ideal location based on soil types, rainfall, climatic data, and, you know, drew a connection to that of Bordeaux. And I think now with, you know, so that was really the first acknowledgement of, you know, how successful this region might be. And it was just further down the road in Mount Barker that a year or so later, the first sort of commercial vineyard was planted. So, you know, being a couple of years before the Margaret River, in fact. So, you know, it's a nice little story there that of his early acknowledgement of how good the region was. And when my parents started researching, you know, if there was merit in planting a vineyard at Franklin Estate, you know, they quickly came across his recommendations from the, you know, State Library, where his little booklet is today. So, yeah, look, it's a nice little story, and I think one that I, you know, many of the growers in Franklin River and in fact ourselves are, you know, very grateful for.
Definitely, especially for that foresight and for, you know, being the first one to stick your neck out and say so. And you've obviously paid homage to that with your Olmo's Reward, one of my favourite wines of yours. But let's talk a little bit about where you got involved. Like we said, you know, Franklin Estate is a family affair. But when did you decide that, you know, wine was going to be the path for you and that you wanted to continue on and see that legacy forward?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of came quite late to me in a way, in that, you know, when you grow up in a vineyard and your parents are saying, come on, let's go at 6 o'clock on a winter's morning and it's, you know, 4 degrees outside and they're encouraging you to, you know, get out there and prune grapevines. You know, I always thought to myself, God, there's got to be something better to do with one's life. But my parents were very encouraging. I mean, you know, Franklin River is an extraordinarily remote place in anyone's language. And, you know, they were very encouraging to get out there and see the rest of Australia and, in fact, the rest of the world. And so, you know, it wasn't on my radar really that, you know, this was a opportunity or, you know, something to just necessarily go back to or be involved with. So I, although I love the land, you know, we grew up in an amazing place. And, you know, as young children, you know, I'd ride, you know, we'd have our horses and I'd ride our horses with my rabbit traps hanging off the saddle and, you know, we'd do a little lap and catch rabbits and, you know, do all these sort of very rural things that I think have, when I look back, and it really entrenched me into really loving where we are, you know, what Franklin River is and what the region is, this, you know, core roots back to the land. And I think, you know, having such a great experience growing up as a child, you know, in this location, inevitably has brought me back here and wanting my children to experience that same thing. But fundamentally, I left school thinking I'd become an architect and did fine arts for a year and got a little bit despondent with that, I suppose, and not knowing what to do, headed off working on broadacre farms in central New South Wales and then southern New South Wales, and ended up going to business school down in Victoria and spent 3 years doing that and worked briefly for 12 months at Rabobank in an office in Melbourne, and loved it. I actually really enjoyed that, and I thought there's a future here for me. And before I got stuck into that. I thought I'd go traveling overseas, in which I hadn't been overseas at the time, and promptly ran out of money. And the only thing I really knew how to do and wanted to do, I didn't want, you know, a lot of my mates were, you know, pouring beer at a bar or making cocktails. I was sort of more keen to stay outdoors. And so I found myself a job with a good friend of the family's, Eric Salomon, in the Kremstal of Austria. And working in his winery for vintage, and it was really simply a means to an end to fund onward travels, but quickly got immersed in what he was doing, and certainly seeing his incredible passion for his craft and you know, making such a great success of quite a small industry, a small business really, which was not the norm in Australia in the late 80s. You know, people quickly grew into quite big production facilities and, you know, businesses got bigger and bigger. And I really thought, wow, this is, you know, this guy's running an incredible business, but he's also so incredibly passionate about it. And, you know, would come to the winery and he'd look, you know, very tired, and I'd say, "You're right, Eric." And he'd say, "Oh, you know, I think there's rain coming, and, you know, I can feel it," and all these sort of things. And you'd like, you know, he clearly hasn't slept well. But in fact, you know, two or three days later, the rain would come, and you know, I honestly believe he could feel it. You know, he just incredibly connected to his vineyards, into his surroundings, and what he was doing with his life. And that had an enormous impact on me, I must say, and was really probably the turning point of saying, you know, gosh, you know, this is something I'd like to be involved with for the rest of my life. And so that's how it sort of came about. And from there, I went down to Germany and worked briefly for Bernhard Breuer, on the edge of the Rheingau, and you know, travelled extensively visiting producers through Germany and down through the south of France, and spending doing a few more vintages, and the rest sort of fell into place. And I returned back to Frankland in 2000. And my sister Elizabeth, who I now share the business with, you know, she'd already just returned home, and you know, like me, her passion was to be involved with the wine industry as well. So we both sort of landed back in the wine business, and probably, you know, I initially thought I'll just help with vintage and then look for a job in the Australian industry somewhere, and probably just saw the opportunity and how great, you know, the landscape was for fine wine production in Franklin River, and thought, wow, gee. And we quickly, you know, sourced them. You know, we found a couple of very small rundown vineyards, of Riesling vineyards, and, you know, Eric sort of really did show me at Salomon, you know, how unique little vineyards can throw such a strong sense of place, and you know, have this transparency of the soil, and you know, I think he made at the time about 14 different single vineyard wines, and I thought, this is ridiculous, when I first went in there and then came out fully converted that that in fact was the thing. And so, look, we found a couple of little vineyard sites around Franklin, and, you know, they were small. You know, one was 1.5 hectares, another was 3 hectares, Poison Hill Vineyard, which we still do today. And, you know, pruned them and got them back into production, and you know, saw quite quickly how prominent they can express their own unique characteristics, and I suppose that in itself led to, you know, further thinking, how do we make that expression of sight even more true and you know, ongoing travels around the world. And in fact, my experience with Salomon and other German growers and south of France, and you know, all these guys back, even back then, talked a lot about organics, and we started seriously thinking about organic wine production. And so 2006, probably the wettest year in the history of Franklin River, we decided to take on organics, and probably very naively initially, but look, in fact, it wasn't long before we were fully on board with it and thinking this was, and I still say today, I think, you know, the decision to become organic and fully certified organic has been one of the best decisions that our business has made in the history of its business, you know, of our business. So, you know, all these things sort of slowly evolved, and yeah, today, I mean, my sister Elizabeth and her husband Brian Kent, he joined us in 2010, and so today we're, you know, the three of us are a very tight-knit, you know, very focused, very determined trio that, you know, our days are all encompassed by wine.
So that's not a bad thing to bring people together.
No,
just for people listening as well, talking about your parents, Barry Smith and Judy Callum, which where we get the Smith Callum from, and then you, like you said, you've got yourself and your sister Elizabeth and her husband, who are taking care of the kind of viticulture and kind of side of things. You know, I've got a blended family, and we're very close, and a lot of people find it quite bizarre, but I think that when it works, it can work. And like you said, when you've all got wine as the kind of, you know, the core that brings you together, I can see how it can completely work. But you all live on site, is that correct?
Yeah, well, we're separated probably by 4 or 5 kilometres, you know, either way. I mean, I live just behind the vineyard, and then Elizabeth and Brian are, you know, up the road a bit and across the road on their property, and then my parents are 4.5 kilometres down the road on their original property. So we have our, you know, We do have our space, but no, you know, look, I think the reality is we've just been so bloody determined to make this all work, and know how, you know, having traveled, I think, you know, we say, I think we added it up over a magnum of wine one night that, you know, combined we bring together about 160 vintages of experience, and we all sit around the kitchen table or the boardroom table, as we call our rustic table in one of our offices. But, you know, it's an incredible amount of knowledge from experience gathered from all over the world, and I think with that, we've been able to really ask ourselves the hard questions, you know, what is unique about our wines? What do we want our wine story to be about? And, you know, vineyard site is the one thing that no one else can replicate. And beyond that, I think, you know, true immersion in the vineyard site, you know, we don't have, you know, it's 4 hours to our local, you know, to our local nightclub, or a couple of hours to a good restaurant scene, or, you know, so when we're in Franklin, we live and breathe it, you know, we're out there, you know, we hear the rain fall on the roof every night, we hear, you know, that we feel the intensity of the sun, or the, you know, the coldness of the mornings, or, you know, all these things. And we take that, you know, we take that and work with it. You know, we adapt. Every season is different. We adapt accordingly and nurture our vines through and take all the knowledge that we have. And I think that is what probably that philosophy, along with our piece of dirt, is what's unique, you know, and that's what we try and put on the table, so to speak, for people to enjoy.
Yeah, I think that that's been very successful. And I'll talk a little bit about your single sites a bit later as well. But there's someone that we didn't mention, and that is Gladys, another family member. Who's Gladys?
Gladys, the guinea fowl, came to prominence very early on in the piece when Judy and Barry had some help from writer, marketing friend of theirs, and said, you know, you guys have got to tell a bit more of your story about, you know, where your, you know, environmental credentials and what's happening in the vineyard. And for quite a while there, there was a blog on the website from Gladys who would update the world on the goings on of, you know, Franklin Estate viticultural, you know, what was happening out in the vineyards, etc. So, you know, that was all a bit of fun. And look, Gladys, there's a new Gladys that comes in, you know, every so often as the generations of guinea fowls have come and gone. But we still use them very much in our, you know, important part of pest control, I suppose, out in the vineyard. So, yeah.
Look, you could be starting the new wave of the guinea fowl, you know, wine guinea fowl of Australia, and a new book could or calendar could be published. So we'll just let everyone know it started here.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about organic certification and also your single sites, I think that's been something incredibly strong that I've always seen from Franklin Estate, that you like you said, you always had a focus on talking about why Poison Hill was different to Isolation Ridge, and that has come across very clearly. But it doesn't surprise me that, you know, after your experience with some of the winemakers you have, why Riesling's always been such a strong suit for you all. I happen to think that there's probably no better expression of Riesling in Australia at this time. So tell me about your experience with Riesling over the years. And I also want to touch, if you don't mind, on Shiraz or Syrah as well, if we can.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it was interesting. Riesling sort of evolved from, you know, Judy and Barry planted the original vineyard, a little under a hectare, and the recommendation was that don't plant too much Riesling because you'll find it hard to sell. And, you know, this is 88, you know, 91 was their first release. By the time they got to 93, they started to appreciate what people were saying. And my mother and father felt that it was such a shame that people didn't understand, you know, these fantastic dry Rieslings, not only of Franklin Estate and Isolation Ridge, but, you know, of, you know, globally. And so Judy set about asking some friends that they'd met on their travels, and Eric Salomon was one of those guys, that, you know, Bernard Breuer and all the, you know, Helmut Donhoff and you know, yeah, all these great producers of Riesling around the world, Ernie Lusen, etc. But she, you know, wrote them a letter and asked them would they be interested in coming to Australia to showcase their beautiful Rieslings, and which, you know, there was some sort of I suppose, you know, absolute interest in, but they thought Australia, really, of all the places in the world to sell our Rieslings. And, you know, a number of those guys came down, and Judy established the first Franklin Estate International Riesling Tasting, which became a biannual event and then triannual, really showcasing these amazing Rieslings. And at the time, you know, a lot of people just didn't have the awareness and understanding of how great these wines were. Now, today, it's a totally different story. People totally get it. These wines are totally sought after and totally sold out well before they're produced. But, you know, back then it was a bit of a novelty for these guys to travel out to Australia, and you know, really for Judy, you know, hats off to her. You know, some of these guys, you know, I remember speaking to Philip Vittman when he was last in Australia, and he said, you know, it is incredible. The Australian market is, you know, our second largest export market behind America. I mean, that's phenomenal, you know. I think Australians really now do understand this varietal. I think there's still much more awareness still to go. It's a really exciting varietal. But on top of that, I should say that Judy and Barry also established a Riesling scholarship. And that was something back in the late 90s. Patrick Walsh, our now distributor of Cellarham wines, won for the first time. And he set off around Europe. You know, his prize was a trip to Europe. And he set off around Europe and like Judy and Barry, fell in love with some of these people and their wines and started importing them. And today, you know, obviously Cellarham runs one of the, you know, great importing businesses of Australia, small boutique importing businesses of Australia. And you know, owes a lot of that to Judy, as he says, but Judy and Barry. So, look, I mean, it's been a fantastic story and the friendship and the camaraderie of, you know, our Riesling producers around the globe have really, I suppose, fast-tracked for Franklin Estate the knowledge and the end wines that we now produce. So that's always been a very special story for us. And then tied into that, I suppose, coming back to your question about Syrah, I mean, Syrah really has been an interesting journey for us, and one where I think the wines today are as good as they've ever been, in that we were there in the early 2000s when America was taking Australian Shiraz and you know, a lot from Barossa and McLaren Vale and these, you know, quite you know, bigger styles, you know, powerful wines, you know, and also some of the bigger, fruitier styles. And Franklin Estate, I've got to say, you know, even from Franklin River, we were thinking, well, you know, that slightly bigger style is where it's at. And probably in the early 2000s, we thought, I'm not sure this is the Syrah or the Shiraz that we're meant to make, you know, when we really sat back and looked at it and looked at how good this cooler climate was for, you know, fine acid lines and beautiful balance and aromatics in Syrah, you know, we really started to change things up. And today, you know, the way we approach Syrah is considerably more complex than the way we considered it, you know, 20 years ago, and, you know, from different clones to different planting densities to different row orientations and all these things that have taken, you know, really a good generation and a half to establish. And, you know, today, you know, really, we're really excited to put, you know, a handful of Syrahs out into the market, which really encapsulate, I suppose, not only the amazing growing conditions, you know, those dry but cool growing conditions we get in Franklin River, but, you know, just really highlighting how great the varietal can be in a different, totally different spectrum to what a lot of our international markets are very used to seeing from Australia.
Definitely. And I think I almost look at them almost as two completely different varieties in that we have, you know, such great expression now of moderate, kind of slightly warmer expressions of Shiraz that I indulge in, but then also the cool climate styles that are coming out really are just so elegant and perfumed, and I almost just see them in two different ways. I appreciate both of them for very, very different reasons. But I think that, you know, you guys in particular are really showcasing just what those southern areas can do in WA with Syrah, and it's incredibly exciting. And I think that may be something that we're going to see take off. You know, I mean, you guys are already doing an amazing job and selling it very well, but I think we're only going to see, this is the start, I think, for for Syrah in the southern areas. But what you said, you know, you talked a little bit about being cooler and you great have some great sunlight hours, but being so far south, you are getting some cold ocean breezes that come through. Just talk us through a little bit about the Franklin River region as a grape growing country.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, so simply put, I suppose, we're about 64 kilometres from the Southern Ocean. And so with that, you come across from the coastline, you know, you make your way up towards Franklin River. You know, you've got gradual elevation, and by the time you get to Franklin Estate, you sit at around 280 metres above sea level, which is not huge, but, you know, Western Australia fundamentally is, you know, pretty flat. And, you know, we joke that you can stand on a beer carton and see across the whole state. But, you know, but, you know, look, there's these, in Franklin River, you've got this beautiful valley system. And so you've got these very picturesque rolling hills that in winter are, you know, a beautiful rich green rolling hills with, you know, native forest. And just between us and the coast is actually one of the biggest nature reserves in the southern hemisphere. You know, an extraordinary expanse of native forest, and I suppose that all sets the tone for these quite remote vineyard sites that sit, you know, quite spread out amongst, you know, beautiful rolling hills and broadacre farmland, but really punctuated by, you know, finding these idyllic sites right on top of the hillsides, which, you know, are all pretty much have this ironstone gravel soil, lateritic soil. And we find that it's within these ironstone lateritic soils that you get incredibly good vine health and balance. The water leaches through nicely and nutrients stay within the soil, and the vines get up with that bit of elevation. They get this beautiful cool breeze that comes in off the Southern Ocean and makes its way up the river valley and cools what otherwise might be quite a warm day. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, these cool sea breezes hit the vineyard areas and you know, cool the vines down, and you can almost see it happening in front of you on a daily basis, where they, you know, the leaves just start to perk up a bit with those cool breezes, and then as the sun sets, you know, we have this incredible big open blue sky that takes up, you know, 3/4 of the landscape. And the heat just disappears, and we have these incredibly cold nights, even in the middle of summer. And so when I say incredibly cold, you know, our daytime temperatures will be 30 degrees, and then by, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the evening, we'll be back down to sort of 12, 14 degrees. And then first thing in the morning, you know, we can be below 10 degrees Celsius. So, you know, it's a very unique location where you get, you know, and almost to some degree, I'd say cool climate is not really the right word for where we are, because of the, you know, the region is quite dry. You know, by December, the green grass is long gone, and we have this beautiful brown rolling hills or straw-coloured rolling hills, and all the grass sort of dies off. And I think in a way, you know, the vines have to really get their roots down into the soil and survive these, you know, this nice long dry summer. And thankfully for the cool evenings, that's their respite. And so you have this beautiful combination of, you know, dryness but coolness. And I see that in the wines. They have, the wines have this incredible ability to show generosity and power, yet be pulled back in with this incredible fine line and acid, you know, this beautiful acid sort of balance that really tightens up the palate and gives it, gives the wines incredible energy. And I think that's a beautiful combination when you think about, you know, great wines of the world.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that there's always drive and length that just continues on with a lot of the wines from the Great Southern, and that it's that that kind of keeps you paying attention to the wine throughout. So, yeah, some such beautiful examples and so much potential for quite a few different varieties down there. And like I said, I think it's only gonna get more exciting. But what do you see for the future of the Great Southern regions of WA? What are you hoping to see in the next few years?
Well, I think already, you know, we're starting to see some really good young producers, you know, doing examples of, dare I say, the more traditional of the varietals. But also, you know, there's plantings going on of all sorts of new things, and you know, there's some new varietals sort of starting to emerge. I mean, you know, at Franklin Estate, we've planted some Tariga Nationale and Gruner Veltliner, and even those two varietals said in the same sentence, people would be scratching their heads. But I do think that, you know, this very unique sort of ability to have incredible hang time and length of season. So, you know, it's not uncommon for our Mourvèdre, for example, and Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, to be picked, you know, the very last week of April or the first week of May. I mean, that's, by then things are getting very cool. But maintain, you know, in the good seasons, maintain the dryness, and it just allows the grapes to hang on the vine and pick up this incredible complexity and intensity of flavour, but not push into high alcohols or high sugar levels. And so it's a really lovely combination, and I think there's actually a lot of opportunity there for all sorts of varietals. And so, yeah, who knows? But there's, I think that's what makes Great Southern really exciting at the moment. There's a lot going on, probably a lot behind the scenes. But I think in the next sort of 4 or 5 years, you'll start to see these wines pop up, and you know, from guys taking fruit from varietals, you know, that go into, you know, some interesting, you know, pet nat type wines, right through to, you know, dry red table wines. But, you know, all across that gamut, I think from that, you know, some of these things are started as a bit of fun, but all of a sudden they've gained a lot of traction and a lot of awareness, and people are starting to think, wow, this, I can actually do this quite seriously. And I think and that's the excitement for me. I think, you know, we'll start to see some incredibly good wines that probably shift people's perception of what Western Australia is about, but also what Great Southern's about. And, you know, but not to take away from, you know, we're very much committed to, you know, Riesling and Syrah. We think those two varietals in their different, you know, guises will have an incredibly strong future, and we're only just touching the surface of those varietals in our, you know, in our family journey. But you know, so it's a really exciting region. And obviously up in Franklin River itself, you know, where, you know, the region's going from strength to strength, with, you know, new plantings and new varietals, and yeah, it's exciting times.
It definitely is. And you guys, I mean, I know it's not a huge amount of wine estates in your GI, but you guys are really leading the way in that. It's hard to kind of argue with just how strong, I think, you know, Franklin Estate is in terms of its history, the people behind it who are you know, wonderful humans such as yourselves, but also that the strength of your brand and the wines that you put on the table year after year, incredibly consistent, but also have developed, and a bit like your undulating land, have kind of found their way into what really suits your sites. And you know, it's just an amazing estate, and we're huge fans over on the East Coast, if you didn't know that already.
No, thank you.
I ask everybody, just to find out a little bit more about your palate, if you could only drink three boozy beverages for the rest of your life, what would they be and why?
You know, I think this is one of the hardest questions that, you know, people, you know, whether it's friends ask me, oh, you know, if I was going to go and choose three wines, what would I buy? Or, you know, if I could, you know, what are you really enjoying drinking at the moment? I just find incredibly hard because, you know, obviously being in Franklin River, one of our big things is, you know, you can't just duck down the road and indulge in, you know, some of the great, you know, which is why I love traveling with our wine so much. And I've just finished 3 weeks up the East Coast, and to see how great some of those retail, you know, small independent retailers, wine bars, the choice of wines that you now get, I just think, wow, you know, we learn as much as, you know, anyone when we hit the marketplace. And so to choose, you know, 3 drinks. I mean, yeah.
Look, I won't hold you to them. I won't hold you to them, and you're allowed to change your mind later.
Yeah. So, look, I'm going to sit right on the fence and probably just say, look, I mean, you know, to go, you know, Riesling's such a big part of it, I'd have to say one of them would have to be, you know, a beautiful aged Riesling. Probably from the Fouts, take your pick there. I love the power and viscosity of those wines. And I'm being very general here, but look, and then I'd probably finish with a Negroni.
Yeah, excellent.
but then in the middle, look, I always take immense pleasure out of sitting around the kitchen table, and I know this is extremely old-fashioned and out of, you know, unpopular at the moment, but some of these, you know, to sit across the table from my father and enjoy, you know, one of his beautiful salad Bordeaux's, you know, I think, you know, probably not so much about the wine as about a man, you know, you sit across the table from. So, look, I think that, you know, they sort of pay homage to our roots a lot too with our, you know, the story of Franklin Estate. So I know that's been very vague, but but look, I think that's where we...
Look, I completely agree with you. I don't really care what's trending or what everybody else wants to drink. Sometimes it really is putting yourself in a moment with great company and looking at some of those great wines of the world where you learn so much. And, yeah, so I think that Bordeaux's a wonderful area to drink from, especially when you've got some great bottle age. Man, they're life-changing wines, and I drank them with my father too. So I completely understand where you're coming from. Hunter, it has been so fantastic to talk to you. We just love what you do. Wines are absolutely superb, and you know, it's from here to outer space for you guys. Who knows what will come next, but I hope to be along for the ride, and I really appreciate you taking some time to speak to me today. It's been a long time coming, and I'm really grateful.
It's been my pleasure, Shanta. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and look forward to catching up next time.
Sounds good. Cheers to you, Hunter. Thank you again.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shanta Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at Over a Glass Pod, and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.